my work has an impact on the lives of the others. And so
I don't give orders to researchers, right? I only provide opportunities.
I feel like RMA is to basically everything. It's,
you're helping others to be successful, and you feel that you're part of that success.
Hi, I'm so happy you're listening to the new episode of the DNA of RMA. Today, my guest is Rui Munhar from the National Funding Agency in Portugal. And I really love talking to him, and now we have this super exciting episode about conflicts at work and what it means to be a researcher desperately looking for funding.
The DNA of RMA, the podcast from the Court of Research Management and Administration.
No worries.
Perfect. So, hello, welcome to the next episode of the DNA of RMA. Today I'm actually going to talk to the first person who is in the same time zone as I am. So it's the first interview, not in the middle of the night or early in the morning. We are both in Lisbon, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to talk to Rui Munhar. Hello.
Hello.
It's really nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Joanna.
I'm going to introduce you real quick. So you work and live in Lisbon in Portugal, did your bachelor, master's in Portugal too, and then your PhD partially at the University of British Columbia in Canada and partially in Lisbon here in Portugal. Then you worked as a researcher in the field of chemistry before you became an RMA. And right now you're a science officer, if I got it right, yes?
Yes, you're perfectly spot on.
Perfect.
Yeah. I did my traveling while I was a researcher, and now I moved to supporting researchers, I guess.
Okay, so that's actually my first question. Like, could you explain what kind of RMA position this is? Like, how do you support researchers?
So I work at the National Funding Agency, to abbreviate, and so we have this an international relations department. So I'm a bit in a different sphere of action in terms of promoting what's out there in terms of European funding, not so much focused. At the national level, of course, there are synergies between what's done at national level and at European level. But basically, I'm in a position where I present mostly opportunities. And so I think this is the most fascinating part of the job, is that you have, or you try to think, or you think, best way to put it, you think, or convince myself, that's how I really enjoy what I do, because I try to think that my work has an impact on the lives of the others. And so I think that's what the most rewarding thing with this job is, that aspect. So to be able to tell that what I did had an impact on the success of the researchers, or a position where I was before, basically. I was a researcher before, and now I'm helping them to have success.
Okay, so you help them to get funding from the European Union?
Or I'll help them in terms of giving the framework of opportunities they have at their disposal to gather like funding for individual applications or at the institutional level for projects, for example. So if you're, for example, just practical example, if you're finishing your PhD and you want to do a postdoc, and you are focused on an international career or working abroad or something like that, then there are opportunities for doing that kind of pathway, but also incoming. So like you have Portuguese researchers abroad, there's a wide community all over the world, and we also present them opportunities for them to come back and pursue their careers back in Portugal. So like welcoming them back again to their homeland. Basically what I did also.
Cool.
I worked abroad and now I'm in Portugal.
Nice. And like, I don't know if your path is like unusual for RMAs, but right now you're having this focus on finances. Before you worked in a bank, then in chemistry. Like, did you receive any kind of education or training in management or economics or like?
No. So like, yeah, the story of the bank was very, very short period, like 6 months. I finished my degree and basically this was summer and I was like 2 or 3 months without a job. And it comes that time when you're in your early 20s, but you can't stay at your parents without working. And so I just had to grab whatever was available, and I did an internship in a bank, basically with working with data management. The training I had was just what I had at my faculty, Instituto Superior Técnico, so like a hardcore engineering school. And so the training I had during my bachelor's enabled me to work in a bank for 6 months. But then I quickly ran out from the bank business. Yeah. And I moved back to academia where I started my PhD. So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. But there was no training. Like then what you do is that in my specific position. So I had then a 9-year career doing research, right?
Okay.
And that experience enables you, enriches you professionally in the sense that if I'm in a position that I provide support and provide opportunities to others, I've been the other side. I've been in the other side, right?
Mm.
And so I think there's a bigger understanding of the need of somebody in that position because I was that person already. I was in that position before. So
yeah,
that is the training prior to starting the position. And then of course I acquired knowledge with my colleagues with the years of experience. It's been now 7 years as a science officer. And so yeah, then the rest comes with a job, I guess.
Learning by doing.
Yeah.
Cool.
And with the colleagues that surround you, I think that's critical. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you're in doing the parallel, you're in a research group. You learn with the most senior PhD students. You learn with the postdocs. You learn from your supervisor, and it's the same at any other type of job. You learn from people who've been there for 20, 30 years. You learn with the colleagues that just arrived with a different perspective. So I think that's something that and you in the sense that as a like you want to put it RMA, you're still in the pretty much living in a very academic focused world, right? And so there's an understanding between members, the ones that are applying and the other and from your side helping them in those applications.
Okay. Questions from my laptop. By helping, what would you like consider the most important skills you gained or needed all those years, like the last 7 years, for example, like soft skills? Or
yeah, I think it's important it's tough to put it so simply, but I think it depends on how passionate you are about your job, right? So that commitment without passion, I think it's tough. But I think basically to be involved in so many in different environments. So for example, before starting this career as an RMA, I went through basically 10 years in different places, different countries, different cultures, different environments. And I think that was the most enriching aspect, was for you to end up in an environment where you get to know so many talented people that you love to learn from. Like you, mm-hmm. you, I think that's also a characteristic. I think that's important, that you, the willingness to learn and to admit that you have a lot to improve, always, right? Mm-hmm. That willingness to learn, to improve, and to be better every day. I guess that's basically what I've been always surprised in terms of, like, when you move from one place, and for example, when I moved from Canada to the US, I just give a practical example. I moved in April. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have a vacation in August, because that's what we do in Portugal. And so I started working on the weekends. And so, but then I realized everybody worked on the weekends. And so what is the standard? Then how can you elevate yourself to have that break in August? So it was, I didn't have that break in August because the standard was that one. So you then enter gain the experience of elevating your standards as well. Or when I moved to Aveiro, I moved into a different field of chemistry, and then I had a lot of the colleagues in terms of giving input and trying to help me out in this in new project. So I think that willingness to learn and to absorb what the others have to teach you, I think that's the most important soft skill that I would say. But I think that's the one point. It's not, this is so general that you cannot simply apply it to RMAs, right?
Yeah, but actually, I heard it from many RMAs.
It's not very helpful in terms of the jump, jumping from being a researcher to an RMA. But I think that's the one. I think understanding the community that you're serving. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other one. But that's the advantage of having a career as a researcher before you moved to a research manager.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes, also that, like, you always have to adapt to new people, new projects, new topics, or new countries, whatever. Actually, I was wondering, because you work with so many different opinions and you deal with a lot of, I don't know, I guess, disappointments, pressure in this whole uni research environment. Have there ever been situations with researchers where you had like a conflict because, for example, you didn't agree with them, how things are going, or things weren't done in time, projects didn't work out, or does that happen?
Yeah, it happened with me. It happened. I think it happens with everyone, because when you're doing I'm gonna talk first about basically, if I have to talk about conflicts, I would say that was during my research time as a researcher. But
okay.
I think it's normal. Like you're doing, first of all, research in my field. I'm just talking about what I have faced in chemistry. So I was doing, I was a synthetic chemist. So basically what I do is I create in the lab new molecules. So things that have never been created before. So you can say that I was a cook or a chef, a chef in chemistry or something. Not the chef in the sense of being at the top position, but the chef in terms of analogy with cooking. But so basically what you do is that you go through periods of withdrawal, because it's failure after failure of creating new things, right?
Yeah.
And then you have that thrill of achieving something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go through a roller coaster of emotions that basically you have a high of achieving that one that result, and that high lasts you for half an hour or the rest of the day, right?
Yeah.
And then it gives you it gave me the energy to face weeks of disappointments, and this was a cycle, right? And yeah. So this and you're working also with this kind of emotions in the lab, which I'm not the only one facing those emotions. The rest of the group, and you talk about groups of 10 or 20 people. And so you can imagine how easily conflicts arise because you're sharing the same physical space. It's an individual work, but there are interdependencies in terms of the resources that you use, right? Mm-hmm. And so conflicts would be quite normal. Also, cultural clashes will also be normal when you have like a multicultural environment, but also enriching at the same mm-hmm. time. But yeah, for sure. Now you want to know how we solve those conflicts, or what is the angle?
Yeah, like I don't know. I was wondering what your role as an RMA is. Like, do you have to give orders or demands in such a situation, or do you have to stay professional and be a part of the team? Or
no, I was talking about my life as a researcher, the profile as an RMA, because I'm not in a higher education institution or a research center. Then I don't have that type of situations, right?
Okay.
So there's no. There's no. I didn't have to face anything related to a conflict between a research manager and the researcher at that institution, right?
Okay.
So there was not that kind of conflict. So
mm-hmm.
it happens. It happens when. But that's. But again, it happens. If you're at the national funding agency, it's you're serving the whole community. It's normal that. Every now or there's occasional situations where that people may be not satisfied with some kind of service provided or okay. or whatever happened. But it's not. I think the what you're trying to put in terms of the type of conflict and a resolution of those conflicts, I don't think I ever faced a situation because I don't give orders to researchers, right? I only provide opportunities and guide them towards success. So that is limit. I think it's the good side because it limits, it reduces conflict to residual to none because, I don't have to, for example, I imagine that the situation would be completely different if you're a researcher trying to submit a proposal and depends on you as a research manager to deal with part of the submission process. And then there are deadlines, everything is done at last minute, the stress levels are high, and that could trigger some sort of conflict. But I think that's... I wouldn't say. I think it's the normal emotional side of the professions. I think.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It's interesting.
It was not very helpful in terms of illustrating a particular situation, but I hope that.
I think I got it. I mean, I can imagine it at least. I was wondering. Maybe you don't have an answer to that, but while you were just talking, I was thinking about. You just said something about submitting proposals. If research groups or researchers submit a proposal, are they being realistic about the expected funding, or do you sometimes have to like get them back to the roots, say, okay, this is not realistic. You are not going to get this funding. Like, or
no, in my job, no, because what is the priority? The priority is always to encourage people to apply to boost that, because sometimes or most of the times it's about confidence, and okay, the the pathway between, or that activation barrier in alchemy chemistry, like for that reaction to happen, sometimes you need some energy to overcome that barrier, so that the reaction happens. And so the same thing with submitting proposals. Like sometimes you're just so immersed in the experimental work that you have to do while as a researcher, and all the other solicitations that you have for other things, that you rarely have time to focus on your ideas and new proposals and out of the box thinking and, mm-hmm. and things like those. And so the job is a lot to be related with providing those opportunities and framing the right or the adequate profile, mm-hmm. to that is the typical successful candidate for that particular instrument, right? Eligibility rules and also the profile. And so if you combine this, it's about, most of the times, it's a self-assessment. So, and we always encourage participation. Basically, you could put things very simply, is that participation has to be encouraged. Mm-hmm. You have to boost the confidence of the researchers, because sometimes it's a lot about thinking, and I had that feeling myself, like, I'm not good enough. There are researchers much better than I am. It's not worth the effort. I'm scared about the evaluator's comments, because they may lower my morale or my self-confidence or whatever. So sometimes it's a lot. And I had that those types of feelings also before. So I think it's very natural in terms of what people are facing in these processes and highly competitive environments. So yeah, I think totally. In this case, the role is to encourage participation, is to frame the conditions as precisely as possible, so that people can do their own then self-assessment and us. I think that it's also like a frame, like an institutional frame, that also provides that type of boosting the confidence of the researchers, I guess. And so that's my role. So I will never be in a position of saying, no, you're not good enough, or you're not adequate, whatever. So that would not be for sure my role. And yeah, that's completely out of question. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I didn't know that. It's also about empowerment and trying to encourage them, because I mean, it makes sense to me, because I think there are not many projects who get funded. Mm-hmm. So you have to try again and again and again. And I guess after like a while, that's discouraging.
No, but I faced that with my own supervisors, right? They would be well-established scientists, and they would still face failure, right? That's part of the job, is to apply for funding, and that's in terms of the PI, right, the principal investigator. Applications is applying for funding is part of the job, when you're already established or independent researcher. But I understand the other side when you're like a PhD, where, for example, in my case, I was a PhD student. I had to apply for grants as a postdoc, the same, looking out what was out there, looking for what was out there to see if I could get funding to pursue my postdoctoral career, right? So you're always faced with yeses and nos, and I think that's as long as you, in my situation, as long as I had the window quite open in terms of of not being so restrictive in terms of the conditions for me to pursue my career, right? So mm-hmm. I was not very selective in terms of I have to do this type of chemistry in this place, in this particular university or whatever. So it was not, mm-hmm. I was not very restrictive in that sense. So I think it worked for me, but I don't know.
Yes, always different, of course. Yeah. And it depends on your field of work. And then.
Yeah.
Would you say, because you're also working, like you said, on the European level, are there projects which are more likely to be funded by the European Union, like certain topics which are popular, or is it all about the expected impact in general, mm-hmm. like which makes a difference, or what decides who gets funding?
Yeah. Okay. It's a trick question because it depends on what you're applying to, right? So there are situations where it's completely, when we say completely bottom up, it means that there are no thematic preconditions, right? And so the only criteria to evaluate the quality of the proposal would be the scientific excellence, for example.